Veritas Wealth is an independent financial planning business focused on managing wealth. In this series, we share hard-earned insights gained through years of experience at the cutting edge of financial planning. Welcome back to the Veritas Wealth Podcast. My name is Sean, and this episode of the Veritas Wealth Podcast brings both Rick and Barry back to the microphone. It's good to see you, gentlemen. Welcome back to our studio. Today's all about blended families and the financial planning thereof. Now, very intriguing subject. Many will feel it doesn't necessarily, you know, belong in their wheelhouse. So before I get to asking you why we feel it's relevant to tackle this subject, what would you consider a blended family to look like?
Sean, so yeah, hi once again. Good to see you. Families that have come together and may have children from previous marriages, we would kind of consider as blended families.
Okay, so are we looking at like a nucleus that may be split through divorce and then a new family that's coming together and both of those, should we call them spouses, both having dependents? Is that sort of where we're coming at this from?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then Barry, how about why would we tackle this subject? What are you thinking here?
Two things on this subject. The first is like how, from our experience, is the blended families, many of the blended families, because when you think of the subject, you think toxicity, real arguments, real problems between the families. But actually, in our experience, is people have managed this brilliantly. Mm-hmm. And there's great harmony between them all. Where we get involved in it, and it comes kind of into our financial planning space, is if somebody passes away, then you end up, things change. Mm. And what we want to do today is just to kind of point out some of the issues that people need to consider and think about and talk about between the spouses or the principals that brought these two families together.
I like that. Okay, we're coming up with all sorts of terminology here. Yeah. The principals now, the new spouses. From where I'm sitting in a marriage that's been going for a couple of years already. I'm still with my same family. So this feels quite foreign in a way, mm-hmm. but there are people in my friendship circle that are going through life changes. Friends that have lost their spouses and are now parenting on their own and are hoping to find a new spouse in time. Or on the other side, I've got friends in my circle that have been divorced and are now moving through navigating that as they find a new partner as well. So although it's not happening to me, I think you're quite right. We're seeing a lot of families split up and then formulate a new existence, a new way of putting their families together. So it is quite a relevant subject, especially in South Africa. We see an alarming divorce rate here in South Africa too, don't we?
Correct. I mean, apparently it's up at 55, 60%. I heard somebody, I don't know whether that's true or not,
sure.
But it was quite an alarming statistic. That's divorce. I mean, the other way a blended family comes together, I don't know if we've said this, is on death. So
there's 100% right there, right?
There's 100%.
That's going to happen to all of us. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So this isn't for people who are in blended families necessarily, although most relevant. But as you're saying, we are in your circle, in your family. If 50% or 60% of people are getting divorced, you are going to see a circumstance where people need to consider some of these issues. And what we can tell you, and what any financial planner who's been at this for a while will tell you, is that on the death of one of the principals, it is one of the most complicated, dealing with a blended family is one of the most complicated things you can deal with. And it is something that needs to be considered by the two principals carefully beforehand.
Beforehand, yeah. So it's all about the planning.
Right? Yeah.
So that's that's really what we're talking about is getting those principals together and having a discussion on how they see this playing out should one of them pass away, because they may have children from previous marriages and children together.
Mm. Right? Mm. I wish you were going to follow that with the words, this is how it's done.
Yeah, but it's yeah, it's one of those things.
I'm shaking my head vigorously here.
All right. So
what we've learned is that there's a lot of humility has been learned on the subject.
Mm.
And bringing what you think you might do yourself is absolutely useless as a planner to bring to the table. It's about other people's values, it's about how they see the world. It's about those relationships. Those relationships are incredibly complicated. Our job is to try and understand those relationships as best as possible and then act as a sounding board for the couple or the individuals to come to us and bounce it off us and to consider what they will do.
Now, as much as I want you to say this is how it's done and this is the way things are, you've quite rightly pointed out that there are many ways for things like this to come to loggerheads. And something you mentioned a little bit earlier, Rick, was around the word trust. Now, I would want for my spouse to trust me to make the right decisions. But you've got an interesting way of looking at the word trust and how that might affect blended families going forward.
Yeah, so we were chatting about trust with a capital T and a small t, right? So in that exact example, you know, you could have a couple that decides they're going to leave everything to one another and trust that they would take care of the children or, you know, the children from a previous marriage as well, right? So so that is trust with a small t. And it's the easiest and simplest to implement. But of course, you know, life is complicated and relationships are different. And very often you may want to use trust with a capital T, which is a structure, actually forming a trust, testamentary trust in your will. And that's ensuring that children from a previous marriage or current children are taken care of. Now, that has huge implications from estate duty, tax, CGT, all sorts of things. But there's no right or wrong answer here. Mm-hmm. It's all about, as Barry says, relationships, ability to manage finances of the surviving spouse, maybe family money from one side of a family. You know, there's lots of dynamics at play. So yeah, we often just need to be a sounding board and it's a discussion and we come up with the best solution that fits that situation.
Mm. And I think as we speak about this, I immediately start to think about the children, right? That's where my brain goes. They might be young children, they might be older children. But for the sake of today's conversation, if we look at just looking after the spouse, right, with one principal and the other principal, if we focus on that for this particular episode, are there any specific scenarios, Barry, that come to mind that you may have experienced where things like this have worked out really well and there's been good conversation and structures have been put in place?
I see that Rick has primed you for that question. obviously, there's an embarrassing story on my side. At one point, I remember many years ago, actually now it's a long time ago, I advised a blended family to speak to the children.
Okay.
And I can now firmly tell you that that was a very, very bad idea.
Mm.
And what I have learned is that it is about the two principals getting together and discussing it and coming up with frameworks and deciding on what they want to do. It is too complicated to go down to especially adult children. And married adult children with another party with another set of values that are coming into play as well makes it even much more complicated. So my advice, and I think now our advice from the bruises I picked up from that is that don't bring in adult children and have those discussions.
Yeah, I think, Barry, you were coming at it from a sort of an idealistic way, you know, like let's see if we can sort this out together. And I think in certain situations that would work. But, you know, your experience was that it didn't really.
Well, and maybe in that case, you can also sort of extrapolate that and say, as you had, Rick, you know, trust with a small t and trust with a capital T, although I'd like for my trust in someone else to be the one with the capital T. I fully understand that trust with a capital T being a formal, structured space. That makes sense. I can see that in my head. And similarly, if we're going to involve all of the children and everybody that's involved, maybe if you do have trust with a small T, you are able to do that because there's open dialogue and there's really strong relationships. But as we've said already, there's no one way to be able to tackle this. Why do you feel, as we've said a couple times over now, once there's a death in the family, once one of those principals has passed away, why does that make it more complicated? Because in essence, a blended family and a, what do we call it, a traditional family, there's no more complexities between the way they navigate things. However, once there is a passing, you've mentioned a few times now, why does it become that much more complicated?
Sean, maybe it's a good way of looking at an example. So let's say you've got a couple that has been married for, and it's their second marriage, and they've each got children from a previous marriage, grown-up children, let's say. And let's say they've even got a child or children from their current marriage. Now they've been married for a while, and now they're planning around, and let's say they're living in a home owned, let's say, by the husband. Now, you know, the husband has said, I would really need to ensure that I am taking care of my wife. I want to make sure that she's fine for the rest of my life. But I do feel I'd like my assets in the, you know, after she's passed away, to go to my children, if possible. And there you've got a scenario of the small T or the capital T, right? Yep. And we can talk about different ways that that can be done, but the small T is I leave everything to my current wife and trust with a small T that she'll make good. And you know, I mean, there are other ways of doing it, right?
And then the next one after that is, as we've kind of mentioned before, you leave the property into a trust with the big T. But now that costs money and complexity. And how is it funded? And who's going to do the repairs? And The second option technically would be to have a thing called a usufruct, where the surviving spouse can stay in the house as long as they're alive.
Repeat that, Barry. What did you call it?
A usufruct.
Okay.
And the problem in South Africa is you don't stay in the big old house because most people at the age of, randomly use 75, move into a retirement village.
Sure.
So now the usufruct is thrown.
Okay.
That legal structure is thrown out of it. We have heard recently of people having long leases. So you've leased the house to the person as long as they're alive and whatever. We're not 100% sure if that works, will that work? And maybe SARS would move in on it if too many people started to do that. So, and then, of course, you have so all of those cost money and taxes. And so it's always much better from an estate planning point of view to leave stuff to your spouse because there's, depending on your marriage regime, but there's, you're avoiding capital gains, you're avoiding estate duty. So it's a much better, to use the small T of trusting somebody is much better. And that is done through your will. It's a request in your will. And although not legally binding, you could put in your will to say, and I would like you on your passing or in your will, even if it is a retirement village, that money is left to my side of the family, as an example.
But it's not enforceable, right?
Correct. And that's where the trust thing comes into play.
Yeah. Just one other thing worth mentioning is, which we've coming across more and more, is trust with a big T. You're leaving... you're leaving a property, let's say, into trust and some investments for the benefit of for a spouse. And let's say, you know, that spouse is the income beneficiary or can live in the house. But ultimately, the capital beneficiaries are the children.
Mm.
Now, what we've also experienced here is a lot of children are living abroad. And I'm talking about adult children. So now those adult children eventually inherit out of a trust. A South African trust that distributes to children abroad can be hugely punitive from an income tax point of view. So there is really a lot of thinking that needs to go in behind making these sorts of decisions. You know, and like Barry said earlier, we kind of do need to just think of our clients now, which are the husband and wife, let's say. But, you know, there is an impact on those children and where they're residing. And they, of course, they may move as well. So you're never going to get things spot on. But it is something that you just need to keep looking at and planning.
And that's an important point, just to reiterate it. So our colleague Claire is now a CFP in the UK, and we've got an association with a firm over there. And what we're finding more and more is that so many of the kids are ending up in the south of England, as one example, but in Australia and in the US. If you get a payout from a South African trust, which is in their view and their tax authority see as a foreign trust, which is where they want to gun for every revenue service is gunning for these now. And when they receive the money, it will become income taxable to them. So on it's top not of a capital.
Top of their normal income.
Yeah. Whereas if they had inherited it in all of these jurisdictions directly through a will, no problem.
Interesting.
Same money.
So how do we make the right decision? I mean, I can't help but think, what's the right thing to do? But I mean, more and more, we know that there isn't one way of doing this. How do we come to the decision that best suits our families?
Look, ideally, I think, if you can trust the other person...
With the small t,
to do what you have requested them to do, that's the simplest, is often the simplest way. It's the simplest, cheapest, most effective way of following your wishes all the way down. And actually, your kids actually benefit even better if they happen to be in one of those jurisdictions.
We've obviously spent a fair amount of time talking about when somebody passes away, which is when things do get most complex. Are there any other blind spots that we might need to be aware of? The essence here for me seems to be that the more we talk about it and we bring it out into the open, the easier it's going to be when life happens to us. Are there any other things that we should be aware of before life happens and somebody passes away?
I think we need the couple, the principals, need to talk about a couple of different scenarios. The house often is a complex issue, especially if they've moved into somebody's family home and that becomes their home. That in the mind of children underneath, that's quite complicated.
Holiday homes
is another complexity. And if you want to pull some emotion into something, that one works. It's just a stick of dynamite. And then the framework in which they will leave money, and that comes down to formulas nearly or ratios of how they're actually going to do it. Because one of the most complicated one is you have two families, which is kind of what we've spoken about already.
Yep.
But this couple can go and have a child together.
That's true. Yep.
And now, is that child not more?
More special?
More special.
Yeah. There what are they entitled to? Yeah. Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's when that's the ultimate complexity. But that's where the couple need to sit down and argue, debate, but discuss and work out what over time they believe to be fair. And that's often where we end up just kind of being the sounding board and kind of just trying to direct the conversation along, but ultimately leaving them come up with the decisions.
Yeah, and we need to be really open to hearing, you know, you can't have your own sort of prejudices or thoughts or ideas. You've got to let them come up with, because there's right. So much family history you don't know about children that are maybe more dependent and, you know, and these things come out, you know, and often a couple sitting there and they will talk about, you know, one child from a previous marriage who, you know, and you've got to let that conversation happen to kind of see if we can find a solution for it. You know?
Yeah, there are lots of emotions at play at the best of times, but when we throw money into the mix and hierarchies or previous assumptions and values and ethics, it does become complicated for any family. But I can see why that much more for a blended family, especially if these conversations haven't been had up front and we're not all on the same page.
It's actually fascinating. Like we have a CRM, system and we have tasks on it. So if there's an outstanding will, we'll write the will in there as a reminder to ourselves that we need to get the will done. But if you look at our whole database at any time and go into all of those tasks, the amount of wills that remain outstanding is extraordinary. And I think it comes down to these moments where people are just unsure and not sure how, if I finalize that will, how will that actually land? And I think there's this like a subconscious thing going on for a lot of people around this.
Mm. Yeah, and it's like nominating guardians, you know? Like,
oh, yeah, a huge one.
It's like, yeah, people are just sort of, I often just say, just make a call, let's get a will done, at least it's in place, you know, and you can always change that down the line.
Do you find that, as you speak about small t and capital T trust, do you find that if people aren't using small letter T to trust someone, and they are interested in doing a capital trust, like a structure, do you feel that the person making that decision is overcome by what that might look like to those on the outside? It might look like I don't small letter T trust you because I'm going to put a capital T letter trust in place, where in actual fact, it's really just a conversation that needs to take place. And this is why I'm putting a capital T trust in place, not because I don't small letter T trust you, but because for reasons that might be relevant to said family, it's the best thing to do. Do we deal with a lot of that emotion in the middle there before making said decision? Maybe that's why we're sitting with so many incomplete wills.
I don't think the delay on signing wills has got to do with nominating a testamentary trust versus just trusting. My sense isn't that.
No.
It's more just getting it done, I guess.
And getting it done. With things like guardians, people really struggle with that one.
Yeah. So it could just be as simple as getting it done, but making a call. Like you're sitting there with your spouse and you're going, I'm going to nominate my brother as the guardian. And your wife's going, geez, really? You know, those are the things that need to just be.
And the thing about a will is you actually just want to get it done. And then you'll start to hone in on it and stew on it. And then don't worry about it. You can change your will in 6 months from now or a year from now, whatever. You can, or straight away. And you kind of go, oh, that was a mistake. I want to change it again. And it doesn't cost an awful lot of money. You get it done again and change it.
Okay. That's good to know. And like you say, rather have it in place than not have anything there at all.
Yeah.
Because we've spoken about cans open and worms everywhere.
Yeah.
That's one surefire way to, what did you say earlier, Barry? Put a stick of dynamite in things and just really see them go pear-shaped.
Yeah. And just one other point is when you are speaking to using a financial planner to pull this together and have these conversations, it's very important that that financial planner is aware of the dynamics that are going on behind. I've been in meetings where the person, maybe they were embarrassed or whatever, they didn't tell me that somebody had an addiction issue. That never came up. I didn't know that, which completely changed the advice of what I would have done.
Yeah, trust with a capital T was much more in play then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, whoa, that's completely different. That person would be incapable of it. Mm-hmm. This is quite a lot of money. We need to sort this out. So that openness and that you feel comfortable enough to have those conversations with a third party, but you can't not share that sort of information or how you might have a problem with somebody else in the family or whatever else or what might happen. So it's just that sharing of information is absolutely critical to try and get you closer to
get the best outcome,
that
you really want, I think. Yeah. Yeah, that is important.
And we often speak on the podcast about how Veritas is very much about lifestyle and either maintaining or deciding what said lifestyle is going to be. And you're quite right. If there isn't that openness and honesty up front, it becomes very difficult for you as the planners to help said family realize whatever that lifestyle is that they're hoping for if things haven't been allotted early enough in the process.
Yeah. So that trust in us is very important.
Mm. Which is why, again, I feel the small t really should be a capital. Maybe yeah, it's a small t right. in italics and bolded. Something
yeah, Rick
that makes
got it
stand
wrong.
Out.
Rick
yeah.
got it wrong.
Yeah, Sean, I mean, one of the other things is when you bring these blended families together, and let's go to a scenario where you've got maybe one, or let's say both partners lost their spouses. Now they come together and they've got children of varying ages, you know, maybe two older children and two younger children, let's say. And you still have to do retirement planning for them as a couple and what assets are each bringing. And sometimes they want to keep things separate, and that's also fine. So there's no right or wrong in this. Holidays, how do they do those? You know, now they've got two different sets of families and values, I guess, bringing it together. It's complicated. But it is very fulfilling when we see it working and getting it right. And I think that is awesome when we get it right.
So balancing the finances of a blended family is no more difficult than any other family makeup. But with open dialogue and clear expectations, it seems that the financial needs of everyone in a blended family can be met. Thank you for listening to the Veritas Wealth Podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and visit veritaswealth.co.za for more on managing your wealth. Veritas Wealth, real people, real conversations. A place where money and life meet.